Welcome back to Healing is My Hobby. I'm Jessica Colarco, a licensed clinical social worker, and this is our final episode of May. We have covered a lot of ground this month. We started with the clinical foundation, what shame is, where it comes from, how it masquerades as truth. We did the reps together and therapy is my cardio, working with the shame voice through naming, reality checking, and self-compassion. We went into the healing lab and designed experiments around treating yourself as worthy through body work, through daily rituals of joy, through the radical act of doing something just for you. And now, in this final episode, I want to take us one layer deeper. Because here is something I believe with conviction after nearly two decades in the therapy room. For many people, shame is not just a thought pattern. It is not just a belief system. It is a trauma response. It lives in the body. It is wired into the nervous system. An understanding that changes everything about how we approach healing it. This is our This Might Be a Trauma Response segment. I want you to leave today with a new frame for the shame you carry. Not a frame of pathology, not a frame of something broken that needs to be fixed, but a frame of, this is a response. This is your system doing exactly what it learned to do. And responses, unlike character flaws, can change. Let's go there together. When we talk about trauma responses, many people think of the obvious ones, hypervigilance, flashbacks, shutting down. But shame is one of the most overlooked trauma responses in clinical practice, and I think it deserves to be named directly. Here is the development picture. When a child grows up in an environment where their emotions, their needs, or their authentic self are consistently met with criticism, withdrawal, humiliation, or unpredictability, the child's nervous system learns something very specific. It learns that being fully yourself is dangerous, that your needs are a threat to your attachment, that who you are, as you are, is not safe to show. Shame becomes the adaptation. The child learns to preemptively collapse, to make themselves small, to hide the parts of themselves that got punished, to monitor constantly for signs of disapproval. This is not weakness. This is the nervous system doing its job. It is protecting the child's most essential need, to stay connected to the people they depend on for survival. The problem is that the nervous system doesn't automatically update when we grow up. The adaptation that kept us safe at 7 years old is still running at 35, at 45, at 55. The threat is no longer present, but the response is still firing. And so we shrink in moments that don't require shrinking. We hide parts of ourselves that are actually beautiful. We brace for rejection that never comes. That is a trauma response. And naming it as one is not about excusing behavior or bypassing responsibility. It is about understanding the origin so we can respond to it with the care it actually deserves rather than more shame on top of shame. I want to get a little bit clinical here because I think understanding what is actually happening in your body during a shame response can be genuinely liberating. When you understand the mechanism, the experience stops feeling like a character flaw and starts feeling like biology. Most of us are familiar with the fight or flight response, the activation that happens when we perceive a threat. Heart rate up, breathing shallow, muscles ready to move. But there is a third branch of the stress response that is less talked about, and it is the one most closely associated with shame. It is called the dorsal vagal response, or in more common language, the freeze and collapse response. When a threat feels inescapable, when there is no way to fight or flee, or when the threat is relational and therefore can't be outrun, the nervous system sometimes responds by shutting down, collapsing inward, going still. Does this sound familiar? The heat in the face, the heaviness in the chest, the urge to disappear, the sudden inability to speak or defend yourself, the sense of wanting to sink through the floor. These are not dramatic metaphors. They are the physical signatures of a dorsal vagal response. They are shame in the body. And because this response is rooted in the automatic nervous system, the part of your neurobiology that operates below conscious awareness, you cannot simply think your way out of it. You cannot logic yourself into feeling okay. The body has to be part of the healing. This is why the experiments in episode 3 were body-based. This is why the self-compassion practice in episode 2 included a hand on the chest, because the body is not just a vehicle for the mind. It is where the wound lives, and it is where healing has to happen. Shame is almost always a relational wound, which means it formed in relationship, and the research is very clear that it heals in relationship too. Attachment theory gives us a powerful lens for understanding this. John Bowlby's foundational work and the decades of research that followed tells us that humans are wired for connection from birth. We are not designed to be self-sufficient. We need attunement, which is the experience of being seen, felt, and responded to by another person. And we need that in order to develop a secure sense of self. When the attunement is disrupted, when the caregiving environment is unpredictable, critical, dismissive, or frightening, what develops instead is an insecure attachment pattern. And embedded in many insecure attachment patterns is a core shame belief. I am not worthy of consistent love. I have to earn connection. I am too much or not enough for the people I need most. These beliefs don't stay in childhood. They travel with us into every significant relationship we have as adults. They shape how we show up with partners, with friends, with colleagues, with our own children. They determine what we allow ourselves to receive, what we feel compelled to give, and how we interpret even neutral interactions through the lens of, am I still acceptable? Am I still loved? I see this constantly in my practice. A client who interprets a delayed text response as evidence of rejection. A woman who cannot stop apologizing even when she has done nothing wrong. A person who gives endlessly in relationships but cannot ask for anything in return. Because somewhere inside, they do not believe they are worth asking. These are not personality quirks. These are the behavioral echoes of early attachment wounds. And understanding them as much, tracing them back to their origin, giving them context is one of the most compassionate things we can do in the healing process. One of the most useful concepts in trauma-informed work is what therapist Dan Siegel calls the window of tolerance. It refers to the optimal zone of nervous system activation, the place where we are present, regulated, and able to process experience without being overwhelmed by it. When we are inside our window of tolerance, we can think, feel, and respond with some flexibility. When shame gets triggered, particularly shame that is rooted in early trauma, we often get pushed outside that window, either into hyperarousal, the racing heart, the defensive anger, the urge to overexplain or attack, or into hypoarousal, the collapse, the numbness, the inability to access words or thoughts. The goal in trauma-informed shame work is not to eliminate the shame response. The goal is to gradually expand the window, to build the capacity to feel shame without being consumed by it, to stay present with the discomfort long enough to process it, rather than either exploding or disappearing. Here are a few somatic practices that support that process. Things you can do in the moment when shame gets activated in your body. Orient to your environment. Slowly look around the room. Name 5 things you can see. This activates the social engagement system and signals your nervous system that you are safe in the present moment. Slow your exhale. A longer exhale, then inhale, activates the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest response. Try breathing in for 4 counts and out for 6 or 8. Even 2 or 3 cycles of this can begin to shift the physiological state. Find a point of contact. Feel your feet on the floor. Feel the weight of your body in the chair. Pressure and contact with a stable surface is grounding. It brings you back into your body when shame is pulling you into your head or out of yourself entirely. Name what's happening without judgment. My chest feels tight. My face feels hot. I notice I want to disappear. Neutral observation of physical sensation without layering shame on top of shame begins to create space between you and the response. None of these practices will resolve the underlying wound on their own, but they are regulatory tools, ways of bringing your nervous system back into a place where healing work is actually possible. You cannot process trauma from outside your window of tolerance. Regulation comes first, then the deeper work. We have spent this entire month with shame, and I want to close by saying something I mean very genuinely. Doing this work is not small. It is not easy. And if any part of this month's content has stirred something in you, if you found yourself sitting with something uncomfortable or recognizing a pattern you hadn't named before or feeling the particular ache of an old wound being seen, I want you to know that is not a problem. That is the beginning of something. Healing shame does not happen all at once. It happens in layers. It happens in moments of being witnessed and not rejected. It happens in the slow, unglamorous practice of treating yourself as worthy even when part of you doesn't believe it yet. It happens in therapy, in safe relationships, in the quiet work of getting to know the parts of yourself that have been hiding for a very long time. And it is possible. I have seen it. I have lived it. The shame that feels like the truest thing about you is not the truest thing about you. It is a wound. And wounds, when they receive the right care, do heal. If this month has brought up something you want to explore more deeply, if you've recognized patterns that feel like more than content you can work through on your own, I want to gently encourage you to seek support. It might mean therapy. It might mean a trusted relationship where you can begin to practice being fully seen. It might mean simply staying in this community and continuing the conversation. Whatever the next step looks like for you, I hope you take it. You deserve the care you've been giving everyone else. That's the invitation I want to leave you with as we close May. Thank you for spending May with me. Thank you for being willing to go to the hard places. This community means everything to me, and I do not take it lightly that you let this work into your life. If you'd like to stay connected, you can sign up for my newsletter at Healing Is My Hobby, where I share weekly reflections, resources, and the blog that accompanies each month's theme. You can follow me on Instagram and YouTube at Healing Is My Hobby. And if you're looking for clinical support and want to learn more about working with me one-on-one, you can visit jessicacolarco.lcsw.com or find me on Instagram at jessicacolarco.lcsw. June is coming, and we are going somewhere that I think follows beautifully from everything we've built this month. Stay tuned. Until then, keep healing. It is the most important work there is.